Channel 9 doing a superb job of covering the golf yesterday. Their coverage starting again today from 10:30 a.m. Alison Whittaker was part of it all yesterday, saw just about every golf ball that was struck and has swung by the broadcast van here at Royal Melbourne. Alison, good morning to you.
Good morning, boys. Yeah, good to be here.
It's was a very, very good day for the internationals yesterday. In fact, in many ways, probably a surprising day for the internationals.
It was a ripper of a day. I don't think a lot of people saw that coming. And quite frankly, it's just kind of energised the event. I think it's brilliant. I think now, you know, the internationals are in with a really incredible chance at walking away with the President's Cup at the end of the week, which is what we kind of all want, isn't it, for the Aussies?
Absolutely.
Yes. We're all on board.
Can you explain yesterday's play? I mean, we've been speaking to so many special guests. We've been able to dissect it or trying to dissect it ourselves. We couldn't find a way, looking at just yesterday's five matches, where we were going to be 3-2 or even go 2.5 each. How do we walk away with 4-1? What's your analysis after one day's play?
Well, when you look at the matches, so there was the opening match where the internationals trailed essentially for every hole.
Yeah. Yes.
The last four, they only ever trailed twice for two singular holes in the last four matches. So they got up early and they essentially just kind of held it there without making too many mistakes. I think that was the big thing that Ernie has been talking so much about, minimalising just your errors around this golf course, missing it in the right places. And it's just, it's not a familiar mind frame for a lot of American players to be thinking that way. They do it for one event of the year, like maybe the US Open, if it's hard and fast. But it's just part of the strategy around this golf course.
I was watching some of their approaches to different holes, the Americans, this is yesterday. But then their body language and their reaction. And there was one where I think it was even, it might have been Tiger's shot. I can't recall which hole. And the ball went at right angles. And actually, you know which one it was? It was one he chipped in on, the par three. But their reaction was almost, he's looked to JT, Justin Thomas, his putt, and thought, what the hell is going on here? How's that ball landed in the middle of the green and rolls at right angles 10 to 20 feet? How quickly can they adjust that mindset to quickly get to the conditions that they're dealing with over the next 3 days?
Well, I think a good question is, what other sport in the world do you try and get close to the target by aiming away from it?
Mm.
You know, and that's something that even in golf, like, you know, they just play target golf so much in the US. The greens are soft, they're receptive, they don't get a lot of roll on the fairways. And you come here and the ball moves so much after it bounces. Like, it's not like it's hitting and stopping, which is genuinely the kind of golf that they play 99% of the year. It's stopping and then the golf course takes control and says, no, I'm going to move you over here. Oh, you didn't see this ditch? Oh, you should have probably paid attention in your practice round, and kind of swipes it off the green. It's got a real personality, Royal Melbourne. You've got to get to know it.
What did you think on the first tee when Adam Scott, from what we've heard, he's going to lead our lowest ranked player, the international's lowest ranked player, when he basically duck hooks his tee shot on one into the trees. I can tell you what I was saying. Actually, I won't be able to say those words on air when I'm watching at home thinking, is that where we're at right now? And he's got the most delightful swing on tour and he's just duck-hooked one into the trees on the first.
I think that gave everyone life, didn't it?
Yeah.
So many people on the tee were saying, if that guy can hit a duck hook with that swing, then we're all in with a chance, quite frankly. Like, you know, what are we working towards? What's the goal? It was a little bit confronting, I think, especially on the first. Everyone kind of looked at each other and went, oh, okay, are we going to get absolutely trounced? You know, are the numbers true? And then he ended up walking away, with a win alongside Ben Ahn.
Speaking of numbers, we had Ben Everill in yesterday, and he was talking about the way that Ernie Els has put the combinations together, and he's basically taken logic and heart and mind out of it and just put the numbers to work and just said, well, whatever the numbers look like, that's who's going to play together. It's a different way of looking at things. You cover golf all year round. Are we seeing more and more of this sort of data-driven analysis and selection and all that sort of stuff?
We saw it. Yeah, we saw it last year at the Ryder Cup as well. Thomas Bjorn did it. Mollywood, you know, Tommy Fleetwood and Francesco Molinari, they were a data-driven pairing.
And it worked.
Yeah. They went undefeated. It is incredibly difficult to stick to your guns. So if you go out and you have a bad first day, you want to go with your instincts. You're almost begging for the numbers to reflect on the leaderboard. But I find it very difficult to think that he didn't look at these groupings that kind of, you know, I'm picturing like one of those old school computers where it goes, you know, and then it like spits out pairing number one.
Or the computer or perfect match. Yeah.
You know, like a kind of like a poker machine popping up. But, you know, it comes out and he's looking at these pairings and they're not what he wants to pick. He did not want these pairings. These weren't natural. So I think he was looking at the numbers. two players would pop up as an option for one guy, and he'd pick the one that made the most sense if they were close within the stats. But it's just so incredibly hard to stick to your guns under this kind of plan.
As we look forward to today, now the pairings have been made. A different format, though. They're going to have alternative shots.
They do.
Tell us about the dynamics of that. It's a little bit unfamiliar. We only see this every couple of years for particularly Australian golfers, but it doesn't often happen around the world. The challenge with that, because I even felt watching yesterday, it just had a different feel and different expectation and responsibility for the person playing their ball. It had more aura about yesterday. What about when you're playing and sharing a ball?
It's difficult. It's really difficult to not say sorry when you hit someone in the trees. That's usually the number one rule. You get out there and you say, all right, don't say sorry to me. We're on the same team. I know you're not trying to hit me in the mark if you do. You see less birdies in foursomes.
Yes.
It's more about strategy. Let's not forget that. So essentially, two players, yesterday they went out, played their own ball. They counted the best score out of the two.
Yep.
Today they share a golf ball. Not everyone uses the same golf ball. So you think about that. They've played their last 15 years with one golf ball, knowing exactly, you know, the yardages with it. But sometimes two guys will walk up and one's like, oh, I've got a Strixon 3. Oh, I've got a Callaway 2. Which one are we using today? And they react differently around the green.
So how does that work? Oh.
Most of the time it comes down to a chat as to who's comfortable with what. So say Nick played Titleist 3 years ago and understands how it's going to work for him, then he might be a little bit more open to maybe switching golf balls or that kind of thing. But it's a discussion that every pairing has that's off mic.
Do you know what I'm hearing here? This is pecking order. This is going to who has authority, yep. Tiger Woods, Justin Thomas, who's the big bull in the pen and who's going to be allowed to bring their golf ball.
Yep. Some will get more of a say than others, I'm guessing. Also, we did mention we've got a couple of general admission tickets for the President's Cup today. We're going to do that for our best text off the speckled text machine in the next 20 minutes. So send us a text on 0433 98 11 16. Now, the crowds yesterday, Alison, I hung around for a little bit yesterday and just walked around. Couldn't get anywhere near Tiger, which, you know, when you're 5'9", you sort of can't really see over the top of people. But I was blown away at the noise. It seems to be that there's a, and you're the one at the events all year round, the level of passion at this event is on full show from the crowd yesterday, because they were really noisy galleries.
They were. And you know what? I didn't realise when I was coming in here this morning, so the gates aren't open yet and there's already people queuing at, you know, at 7:30 in the morning. By around about 9 o'clock, they say that you can't see the end of the line. That's how many people are streaming in. It took me half an hour to move 2 kilometres to try and get home last night, because I made the mistake of trying to do it when everyone else was doing it.
Yes.
I should have done my homework here before I left. But I think it's interesting that the first tee is one of the best experiences in golf at these events. I can't stress that enough. If you are coming to the golf today and you're going to be here around, you know, they tee off at 11:02 today, go near the first tee. Some of the songs that the guys up there are singing are hilarious. I heard that apparently yesterday they were doing CT Pan, but like to Macho Man. So CT, CT Pan, I want to be CT Pan. So stuff like that, and the atmosphere, it's... The hype is unbelievable. I've been to Solheim Cups in the past, and I always tried to creep out for those moments. And you kind of get them few and far between, but it's honestly one of the best sporting times of your life.
How much more is the hype with the Tiger group? How much does that change the dynamics for the people that are playing against Tiger? So it's Tiger and Justin Thomas again, and I'll ask you about why Tiger's backing up after yesterday. But the players that they're playing against, and how does that change the way that they go about it when they've got an extra couple of thousand people watching every step that they take?
I think it was really difficult for the guys playing Tiger yesterday, because I don't think they felt like they had the home ground advantage. And Mark Leishman is from Victoria. He's from here.
He's ours.
Yeah, he's one of ours. Yes. I was in the VIS with Mark. And so, you know, he's got a lot of local help around. But I'd say 50% of the crowd is with that single match. And then the rest is kind of tapered over the other four matches. It's just... 10 people deep in some places. It's hard to get a spot to watch. You almost have to plan where to be to try and intercept them. Genuinely, it might be the last time we ever see Tiger on Aussie shores, and everyone just wants to get a piece, and I understand that.
His match is third up today, isn't it? From memory, third of the five matches, Tiger Woods. So That match will be teeing off at what time? Have you
he's
got
the fourth. He's match. Fourth. Sorry, he's the yep. fourth against Matsuyama and Anne. They're at 11:41. They tee off.
Alison, can you stick around for a little bit longer?
Absolutely.
I want to talk to you about life on the tour and the 36 weeks a year that you're spending away from home. Do you choose this?
This is mine. Straight out of my weekend catalogue.
Out of your Spotify account?
This is right out of it.
It's like the other day when you said to me during an ad break, so I play this on my iPod. I went, no one plays anything on an iPod.
I have an
anymore.
iPod.
No.
I do. I have an iPod.
Do you really?
Absolutely I do. One of those little ones because I like to exercise every now and then. And I don't want to take, I don't have a watch and I don't have, I don't like running with my phone. So I have an old school little iPod that I update regularly with songs.
Can I ask, how do you put songs on it?
I don't know, my wife. I don't know how to do that.
Alison Whittaker is part of the Channel 9 coverage of the President's Cup. She's with us at the moment. You wouldn't have an iPod, Alison, a well-travelled person like yourself.
No. It's all about putting everything into one unit for me so I don't have to carry that much around. But it sounds like yours is still pretty light. You've gone old school.
But how else do you listen to music if you're running and you want wireless headphones?
Just put it on your phone.
But I don't want to run with a phone.
Well, then
it's too bulky.
Okay.
I think I bring up a really good point here. I feel like I can defend myself on this one.
Well, no, because I've seen your phone. And where's the rest of it?
It's a Nokia.
Ben Cunnington's Nokia from the other
3310.
Alison, you were just telling us during the break about how, from this point, the internationals, how well placed they are. And history says that in this tournament play, they are really well placed.
They are. You know what? And, you know, there's still a lot of golf to be played. And quite frankly, I think today might be a little bit of an equaliser from the foursomes. But no one has ever lost in a President's or Ryder Cup. And I'm saying that purely because of how much history there is in the Ryder Cup. There's way more than the President's Cup. No one has ever lost after leading by 3 or more points on the opening day, ever.
That's
how significant yesterday was. Yes. You know, it's put them in such a good position. And yeah, I mean, today's pairings, again, it's kind of like the magical computer's gone, you know, we're pressing the button again. And they're not comfortable pairings for the international side. If you look at them, you could quite easily see that, you know, maybe today might swing towards the Americans. But, I mean, we could have said that again yesterday. Yeah. Well, who knows?
What sort of pep talk or feedback would have Tiger Woods, as captain of the US team, giving his troops coming off the back of a 4-1 deficit?
Well, to begin with, they all hate losing. They are an incredibly competitive side, the US team. Justin Thomas, Dustin Johnson, both are probably two of the most competitive guys alongside Tiger Woods. The other guys, obviously, no one likes losing, but they kind of hide it a little bit better. They would have been so fiery yesterday afternoon, gone, what do we have to do? Today wasn't great. How do we fix it? I think the main thing is to trust the process and to trust their talent. If I was on the US team, you know, you look at the average world ranking for the US team is lower than our best player in Adam Scott. And trusting that is going to kick in eventually over. It's kind of like shaking, you know, shake the flour, you know, and then kind of, well, I guess, what do you do? Shake cream as well? And the cream rises. Shake milk? What are you shaking? You're shaking something that the good stuff gets to the top. That's all I know.
The cream rises.
Not much of a baker.
Cream rises. One thing I noticed on TV, and they do say TV puts a little bit extra size on you, but the one that stood out to me yesterday was Bryson DeChambeau. Now, this is a man that, I don't know what degree he has, but it's scientific, and you know, hence why the one-length clubs and everything that goes with Bryson DeChambeau and golf. He looked massive yesterday. How much does that impact his golf?
Well, he's gained 12 kilos, so he's gone from 88 to 100 kilos.
Wow.
In probably 2 months.
That's
he's
a
done
lot.
It quickly. All of the boys on the US team are reaming him, saying, oh, he barely talks to us anymore because he's busy eating.
I should say, he's not Russian, is he?
but it's quite funny how, you know, you look at him, and I was looking at his numbers the other day, and he's bulked up in his shoulders and, you know, the arm, like the arm width and all of that kind of jazz. And it's just, he's gained an inch in his neck. And I didn't even realise that was a thing. The funny thing on commentary was yesterday that Wayne Grady was sitting alongside me when I said this, and he looked at me and he goes, I don't get it. So he's grown an inch. And I went, no, it's not vertical. Grades, it's around.
It's horizontal.
You know, when you go and get a suit and they pull it, you know, they pull it around you. Yeah, so I had to kind of explain that one a little bit. It was funny.
We don't want to hold you up for too much longer, but you do have a coffee on the way, so we might steal you for a couple more minutes. You were telling us before off air that you're on the road for the best part of 30-odd weeks a year now. How is that difficult? Because sometimes if we've got one or two games of footy on a weekend where we're interstate, we think, gee, that's a big weekend. But that's next level what you're doing.
It's probably worse for my family. Well, maybe they like having me away. Who knows? I think the best thing about my job is that it's not all to the same place. True. So every single week we go and spend a week in a different spot. And so you're constantly getting refreshed, which was one of the things that I loved when I was playing professional golf about playing in Europe, was that it's so different to the US in the fact that you're in London one week and you're in Madrid in the next. Yep. And there's always something to see and something to do. And the kind of technical side of my job is that people are moving targets. So people change caddies each week. They change coaches each week. The information you had last week might not be valid anymore. So you constantly kind of have to stay up to date, which I think kind of keeps you fresh out there as well.
Off the back of that, now golf lovers will need to know this. How much golf do you get to play then? You're traveling the world, watching some of the greatest golfers, going to some of the best courses in the world. How much golf do you get to play?
Well, I'm lucky that the best golf courses in the world are here in Melbourne when I come home. So, yeah, you know, I'm a member across the road at Vic. I actually grew up on the 13th tee here. So that's my backyard. And I was coached by the head pro here, Bruce Green. He used to drive me back in a golf cart and hand my clubs over the fence, which is so cool. You know, just at Royal Melbourne, no big deal. I've been a spoilt child my entire life. It's kind of interesting because you can't keep your golf at the level that you speak of it at. So you know how to be an expert, but to actually maintain that in, say, 10 to 15 weeks at your home is really difficult. So I love going to the range where it's actually less expectation. I don't finish out golf holes a lot. So I kind of try to stay away from keeping score as well, because it's one of the only games that, you know, it's so score dictated and you're told what you should be doing every hole. You know, this is a par four. You should be shooting four. You know, you are not a pro if you shoot five. So
Take seven, actually. Yeah.
I know, I probably would as well, especially on the fourth hole out here at Royal Melbourne. But, you know, just managing that kind of relationship's tricky. You know, and I think it is for a lot of professional athletes that kind of transition out. I'm sure you're the same, Nick, in terms of, you know, where you think you are versus, you know, where your body has sometimes moved to as well.
What's the one thing when you come back to Melbourne, what's the first thing you eat when you come back to Melbourne?
I go on a cleanse, essentially. I mean, I go every day to the South Melbourne market that it's open. That's kind of my thing, is that I look around, I see what looks good on the day. It's very MasterChef-like. Yeah. And I go out. I don't have the time constraints, though. I don't give myself 30 minutes.
And you don't have someone yelling at you in the background.
No, it'd be weird if Gary and George popped up, actually.
Wouldn't surprise me, though.
He's such an angry man, George. Yeah.
You're going with the fish? Really? Nice choice. I just love cooking in the kitchen, because you eat out so much on the road that's kind of my big luxury item.
Thank you for coming by. We really appreciate it. We're loving your work on Channel 9. So enjoy the rest of the weekend. And have you got a prediction for us? Can the internationals hold on from here?
I think it's going to be close. Yeah, I'm getting that feeling because they're strong in singles, they're strong in four ball, and there's another one of those coming on Saturday. So it should be good fun. But thanks for having me.
We look forward to it. Alison Whittaker, part of the Channel 9 coverage that starts today from 10:30 a.m.